Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International. It is August 28th, right before Labor Day, and thank you all for joining us. And today we're going to talk about how to prepare your athlete for an athlete for competition. And a case study I want to share with you, and I welcome all of your questions and any case studies that you have, or your clients you're working with that are stuck, or clients you'd like to work with, or yourself. I know we're all athletes ourselves in some form, and you know, there's some things that we can learn from our own training too. So, so that's great. So welcome. First, of course, the main reason for these calls is to answer your questions. And if you're if you have questions or just want to report in about any successes that you have or things that are clients that you're working with, yeah, feel free. Yeah, does anybody have any progress or successes or you want to talk about it or questions off of that? Okay, everybody's shy.
<We're> not...
Okay, so we've got Greg and Alex and John. I know, John Cannon, you're in Omaha, Nebraska, right?
Right.
Which is actually where I was born, which is pretty exciting. since you're relatively new on the call, do you want to introduce yourself to the group here?
Well, sure. John Cannon, Omaha, Nebraska. I have a PhD in psychology. I've been in private practice for 8 years. I've been doing this kind of work for 20 years. Mostly work with, I do an intensive outpatient substance abuse group, hours a week. And so I work a lot with substance abuse. I work a lot with what we call co-occurring disorders. I work a lot with folks with depression, anxiety disorder, and all along I've done a little bit of work with athletes just because of my background and my family's background and so forth. And I'm certainly looking to expand significantly on that part of my practice.
Yeah, great. Okay, good. Sounds good. And Greg and Alex, do you want to introduce yourself to John there?
Yeah, I am Alex Diaz. I'm in private practice, and I've been doing this type of therapy for about 17, 18 years, and expanding my practice working with athletes for the past 5, 6 years. I'm a consultant for a local college nearby here, and I primarily see athletes in the range of between 11, 10, 11, 12, until 20 years old. It's primarily the middle school, high school athletes, trying to help them manage their performance as they have so much on their plate. Most of them are under so much pressure from many different directions, not only from on their own, but also coming from parents, coaches, expectations, and so anyways, that's kind of my target audience.
Mm-hmm.
So
nice to meet you, Alex.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah.
Hey, great. Greg, are you there?
I am here.
Yeah, do you want to introduce yourself to John, too, and what you do?
Yep, I will. I am a performance coach. I have started this consulting business in 2008 and kind of shifted, actually, from the corporate world or business training world to focus primarily on collegiate athletic teams. And my focus is, in fact, just that, team building primarily. But over that process of working with teams, there's always seems to be that one or two athletes that needs and or wants additional help, or a coach wants additional help with the emotional side or the psychological side, trying to get past those distractions, if you will, that are impeding their performance. So I joined this group, it's been over 6 months ago now, in hopes to expand my repertoire, if you will, in the visualization primarily. And I just got back off a 10-day tour that I worked with three different college soccer teams in both Colorado and Texas. And in fact, each of those teams had one team had two youngsters, and the other had one apiece that wanted, there again, some individual help with some visualization techniques to help them get past some little mental blocks that they have. So it's been real fun, and I really enjoy it. I've always loved sports, and looking for this to continue to grow.
Hey, that's fantastic. Congratulations, great. Greg, on your,
thank you.
On your tours there and soccer teams. And wow, that's great. And you play racquetball yourself, right? Is it racquetball or
yes.
handball? Yeah, racquetball.
Yeah, I do play racquetball and golf, yeah.
Hope your shoulder's getting better.
it's getting stronger every week.
Oh, that's great, yeah. So, yeah, this is fantastic. So, today we're going to talk about, thanks for everybody introducing themselves, and probably more people coming on since it's Labor Day weekend, this weekend too, maybe a lot of people are away on vacation, that kind of thing, getting in that last summer vacation. just wanted to talk about kind of a toolbox to help you mentally prepare your athletes for top level competitions, and also techniques for dealing with all the different possible scenarios that could happen, and assessing your athletes' current mental skills, and talk about your athletes, kind of find your athletes' motivational level, and then be able to take them to a higher motivational level if they seem to be in a slump. Sometimes that can happen if they had an error or a mistake or a bad day. Then different strategies you can use, a couple of months before the competition, and then a couple of weeks before, a couple of days before, and the day of. There's different things you can do as you're getting closer to a competition, and then how to talk about how to prepare a custom pre-event visualization MP3, talk about how to use those three P's of your performing edge: the positive images, which is visualization, and then power words, which is your self-talk for a specific situation, and then a present focus, how to help your athlete relax. In a competition type thing, you get, one of the most common complaints I hear is an athlete saying, or the parent calling saying, my athlete is fantastic in practice, or they're good in the first rounds, but then when it gets to the main event, they do something stupid and blow it, and can't perform when the pressure's on. So that's really the time to work with them to try to have that same mindset in the big event, the main event, as in their practice and the lesser rounds leading up to the main event, depending on what your sport is. And then we can work with also talking about dealing with difficult athlete scenarios, different special athlete issues that happen. So, currently I have a case study, an athlete. I just wanted to share with you first, an athlete I'm now preparing to go to his national competition this weekend, and kind of take you behind the scenes of what I was doing with him. And then this applies no matter what sport you're working with. I think the same principles apply. So in this case, it was a parent that called about her 16-year-old son, who is a BMX racer, bicycle racer. That's you're probably familiar with that sport, but if you're not, you could just go to BMX racing. But it's basically racing down a hill. Usually eight guys from a gate at the top, and they're going on this track with their bicycles, special BMX bicycles that they pedal down a course that's very fast, and there's jumps and turns and they're just trying to make it to the bottom. The first guy to the bottom wins. My client, we'll call him Austin, was the presenting problem was that They just looked online and found my name and wanted to work with me because they said that, you know, I'd work with top athletes. So if there's any way you can work, you know, get to the point, you know, work with a top athlete, say, for free at first, then that can help you to, you know, get the credibility so that, you know, parents and athletes will want to work with you. Did someone else new just join us? I heard a ding, I think.
Well, this is John. I lost the signal. I don't know what happened, but I'm on a different phone now, so hopefully this one will stay
John.
With you.
Oh,
yeah.
That's John. Okay, cool. Oh, that's great. Thanks for rejoining us. Yeah.
Yep.
And so they oftentimes, you know, the parents, the first conversation with the parent or athlete is really important when they want to get, you know, try to get you as a is to check you out to see if they want to work with you. And so they had asked me if I've worked with BMX riders before. I've worked with a couple, so I talked about those. If you get an email or something from someone that, you know, with a newer sport that you're not familiar with, it's good to, you can always just go on YouTube and, you know, find out, learn really quickly about the sport and just watch videos. And get a little bit of the, as you listen to the commentators, you learn the language. But so it's not really necessary to know that particular sport. You know, that's not my, BMX racing is not my specialty. I've never done it myself, or else I'd be in the hospital. But I guess it's mostly, you know, got younger guys, 16 to 25-year-old guys doing it. And it's dangerous, and it's kind of like an extreme sport. But this, but you can learn very quickly about the sport just by going online, or and then having that first conversation with the parent or the child. So, in this case, it was a kid, Austin, who's 16 years old, amateur, and the Olympic Training Center has invited him out 3 times. He's gone there once in last year to work at the Olympic Training Center in Costa, down south, you know, near San Diego there. And his goal is to compete in the 2020 Olympics. Because he'll be at his peak age then, when most of the athletes are, you know, at their best. And so the problem was that the mother said his experience level is less than half of the other people he's competing against. He's super strong, super fast, but that his head gets in the way. And when he's doing his qualifying rounds, he's doing fine, but he, you know, there's usually the first round, and then there's the quarterfinals, the semifinals, but when he gets to what's called the main event, which is the finals, then he blows it, and that's the complaint by the parent and the child, that he comes unclipped, you know, from his pedals, or gets pushed off the track, and has difficulty judging distance where he is to another racer, judging how he's really fast, but he says that he will do something, you know, not judge things correctly, and it's so such a fast sport, you have to really be on all the time. And his Olympic coaches say that he scores in the top two to three guys every time, but that his head is getting in the way of his performance. You know, he'll be in first place coming out of the gate, but then does something stupid, as the parent describes it, and then he comes in last, and you just can make one small error, and then you come in last place. So that's a kind of example of what you might get from a parent or an athlete as a, an opening complaint. The coaches want him to come back in October, this October. He's been there twice already at the Olympic Training Center, but the mother says he's got to be mentally prepared. And also what happens is he's 16 and he's getting ready to turn 17, so he'll be going up to a new class of 17, 18-year-olds into September, which is a much more competitive class. And so, which, you know, where you're a big fish in a small pond at age 17, when oftentimes when athletes turn at another age, they're all of a sudden they're not that big fish anymore, and the competition level goes up. So, the mother says he'll be about what she calls a basket case, and yet he's so tall, a mental basket case. So there's a new term for us, mental basket case. And he's so totally capable physically. He's got the drive, desire, commitment. He writes his goals down every day to be in the 2020 Olympics, very focused. But, of course, the 2020 Olympics, that's a ways away, 6 years, and so we need things to be able to keep him going right now and to work on daily training. Some of the questions that the mother asked me are, what's the way, how do I work with athletes? How much time will it take? How many sessions to get to see some progress, some results? So you might want to write down those questions that you'll get from parents or from athletes. And can we do this remotely, you know, by phone, or does it need to be in office? A lot of parents assume that they think that you got to have to be local there to work with them, and so it's important on your website or on your emails or and phone calls to let them know that you be real clear that you can do this remotely by phone. That's the great thing about sports psychology, I think, and this performing edge coaching is that you can do it anywhere around the world by phone or Skype, because Skype is free. You can work with athletes all over the world, and in fact, this athlete, Austin, his coach is in Africa. One of the best coaches in the world is there in Africa. So right after each of his rounds, when he's doing his qualifying runs down the hill, his mother actually videotapes his run and then emails it immediately to his coach in Africa. And then right after the run, you know, that he'll do the first round, and then before he gets to the quarterfinals, he'll have a conversation with the coach either by phone or email, and the coach can review his video that the mother took of his race. And so he's actually, even though he's in Africa, thousands of miles away, the coach is able to see the video right there and give him feedback about what he needs to do for the next round going into it. So he's actually coaching right there on the spot in between the rounds. So that's an example of how actually coaching at, you know, right there on the spot during a competition, how well that can work. And you could do the same thing. Sometimes, you know, athletes don't have coaches that are that available. But if you were you could do the same thing, and I plan to do the same thing with the parent. If the parent can, could send you a video of, even if you're not there at a competition, like this next one will be in, like, Louisville, Kentucky. He's going to Nationals this weekend. And even though I can't fly there, the mother could also, you know, email me the video of the round. And rather than just talk about the technical aspects like the coach would, you know, I could ask him, you know, talk to him in between the rounds about how he's feeling and where he maybe lost focus and how he could regain his focus, or if he didn't do as well, how he can bounce back, that resilience. So, so it's kind of exciting way that an example of how a parent and the athlete and this coach way over in Africa are working together, and now myself here in California can work together as a team before. I'm working with him, of course, before the competition, and then could work with him during competitions too, since he's got to go through these four rounds to get to the main event. And it's usually in the main event where he messes up and doesn't perform well. So, and then another question that the parent asked is, do you click with certain people, or is it, is it hard to get build a rapport with certain people? And I said that I just, because I'm an athlete, and you can say this yourself too, I said, because I'm an athlete, I understand, and I'm currently training and hard and competing myself, I understand what these athletes are going through, and you know, I work with kids all the time, 16 years old, and feel like I gain a real rapport with them right away, just by because I understand the sports and able to, and I love what I do, and can really connect with them well. So that's another question that you'll get. If you can connect with the parent who's calling you right there, then you're showing them that, you know, it's probably easy for you to connect with the athlete as well. Because first you're trying to sell the parent on the idea, and then they need to talk with their with the athlete as well. So I talked with the parent on the phone first, had that first conversation, and she really liked the idea. I said, the way I work with athletes is, you know, usually once a week by phone, 50 minutes to an hour, and she asked about how much time, how many sessions, I think it's good to be flexible with that answer. And I said, I work usually within 4 to 8 sessions or so. You know, we can get some real solid results. And usually even after the first session, doing that first pre-assessment visualization or doing the visualization for them and sending it to them right away, it can make a huge difference. They can get a great transformation. So, some parents have a limited budget, and they may only want to pay for one session and kind of try this out. So you can, you know, let them know. I think it's really important to let them know how much you can do, just even in one session, to make a big difference, and to give them this a really valuable tool of your visualization, custom visualization you can do for them. The process that we learn in this Performing Edge coaching course. And then letting them know that doing it remotely by phone, some parents wonder, well, you know, is my child going to be able to pay attention if they're on the phone, or are they going to be doing other things? And so I let them know that I think the phone is a really great tool, because kids are on the phone all the time. And so they're really used to that, and that sometimes it can work even better than an in-office visit, because they're used to working on the phone. You don't have to drive and bring them into a session, and it seems more confidential because I'm out here in California, or you know, thousands of miles away. They're back in St. Louis. In Missouri, and so it seems that they, the athlete feels safe, and that it's a confidential environment where they can talk about anything, talk about how it's going. So I just talked about those things. Another thing the parent mentioned, and this is often the case with kids with athletes, is that that this athlete just started school, Austin, and that BMX racing has nothing to do with his school. He's an athlete. So he feels like an outcast at school because they don't have BMX racing. It's kind of a different sport. And so his best friends are the top athletes at the Olympic Training Center, which is, you know, kind of far away. So that's one issue he's dealing with. Then, and of course, parents will ask you how many what your fees are and how much you charge. And so you want to, you know, just tell them that if you have options, for some people have the more sessions you have that they pay for in advance, the less the sessions are. And so you can let them know whatever your fee structure is. So the parent was happy with that, and I went on to then talk, she said, well, why don't you talk to Austin? He's right here, and talked to him a little bit on the phone. So I did that, then just had a conversation with him, too, to have him feel comfortable with me, because he had this big race coming up, a 3-day regional tough competition, or it's a national competition, this coming weekend. So it's good to, you know, he needed some extra help. So then Austin got on the phone with me and said sometimes, you know, he goes into a competition. He puts in a lot more work than others, he feels. He says, I'm faster. I go through my qualifying rounds. And then the main event, I end up screwing up. He says part of it is a lack of experience, not having the same level of experience as the top riders. and a lot of times, you know, in the he's so strong and so fast, he's out all of a sudden right out of the gate, he's out in front. But then he says, when I get out of the gate mentally, I somehow screw up. Sometimes I overthink it. Overthinking a jump in the middle of a race, trying to have it be just perfect. So he gets into a whole different kind of mindset in the main event than he does in the qualifying rounds. So he says he blows it, comes unclipped, or gets pushed off the track, or you know, has difficulty judging that distance. So they agreed that they wanted to start working with me, and yeah, I've had two sessions with him now. Now, right today, he's traveling to the Nationals in Louisville, Kentucky. And also, I had the parent ask the parent, this is one thing that would be really good to ask them, is do they have any videos of them, of that athlete performing? And can you send that to me so I can see him, you know, actually on the BMX bike racing? And so the parent sent me his recent race, one of his a video from one of his races there, with and you could hear the commentator, so you know what's going on a little bit. And so I got to see that video, and then I could, you know, in the first session, I could talk with Austin about the video, and it's how it all happened so fast with BMX racing. It's over in just, I don't know, 15 seconds or so. And so I asked him to, you know, Austin to tell me where he was in the race and what he was thinking and all, and so kind of go through and commentate for me on that. So I got a better idea of what was going on. So I think the key here was, and you'll find this with many athletes that you work with, it's the final competition that's the tough part, or the, you know, as you're getting to the really heavy competition, that's the part that is hardest to deal with. He says, I asked him about his negative thoughts in our first session there. Then when I worked with him, you want to try to schedule also your first session as soon as possible after that first call. I think after, you know, their first inquiry call, because usually that's they're calling because there's a problem, or the problem is really present in their minds right at that moment. And if you wait a week or two, then oftentimes it doesn't seem as important, or they may forget about you. So if you can get schedule that first session right away the next day, or even that, sometimes it's that day, you know, they might have a competition coming up the next day and they're really in a panic mode or feeling really anxious and wanting some help. So if you can make time to do a first session right away, then you'll tend to get them hooked, I think, and get realize the value of your services. So one of the first things I did was I asked Austin about his negative thoughts, what he goes through his mind when he messes up or doesn't do as well. And he said, I usually try to focus too much on the track and getting everything perfect. I make one little mistake and it costs me the event. He says, I over-try. And I asked him about, you know, different races where he's had problems. He said, yeah, it was this last race he was in first place, and then all weekend he had just a little trouble with the first jump, and then it he got off balance. It forced him to unclip, meaning, you know, his feet unclipping from the pedals, and then he ended up losing. So those are the issues that he presented to me. So, yeah, before I tell you what I did with him, when I kind of open it up to you all, and just given, kind of use this first as a little workshop, is as you hear this, what would you do with Austin, do you think? What are some ideas that you would do to help him prepare for this Nationals coming up? Anybody want to jump in? Are you guys there, Alex?
Yeah, I'm here.
And Greg? And John?
Yep, hello.
Oh, good. Okay. Does anybody have any ideas? even though you don't, if you don't know the sport, it's okay, because I'm not the, you know, it's just something that, you know, to help him to have that same mentality in the main, mm-hmm. you know, in that main event as he does in the rounds.
Well, I would want to know if he could identify, you know, how different his thinking is in the final round as compared to his thinking, you know, just prior to starting the any of those preliminaries. Sounds like he's really relaxed and loose and, going into the preliminaries, but he tightens up definitely in the final round. So what is he saying to himself?
Yeah. Right. I like that, yeah. And I think, one answer to that, that's excellent, John, that, tightening up, being aware of his body, and usually in the final round, that's where all the best guys are, of course, and that's where the biggest, that's where the stakes are the highest, and everything's on the line, and I think he's putting a lot of pressure on himself. He's saying, wow, these are the best guys in the country right here up against, and everybody's wanting to go for the gold, to go for the win. And he knows that sponsorship is at stake. He has some sponsorship currently, but he could move up, get a lot better sponsorship if he you know, performs well at these nationals. So given that, do you have any ideas about what, once we identify that, what to do with that, how to change those thoughts?
Well, I mean, if he could identify and compare and contrast how he's, you know, thinking differently just prior to a prelim than he is in the championship, then to have him focus more on, well, let's think the way that you do going into the prelim, and, you know, never, I forget who said it, but, you know, never let the moment be bigger than you, and it sounds like that he does a good job with that up until, you know, until the money round, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly, and that's a whole different thing. Yeah, so that's great, John. Yeah, anyone else have ideas too? Alex or Greg? You might be on mute. But anyway, I think that's great, John, and that's exactly what I was doing, yeah, to have that same mentality. And to just say, you know, things like, this is practice, because practice is like a fun, you know, when he's relaxed. So being able to say, this is practice, this is fun, because really, even though it's a final round, every race is a practice for the next race. Even if it's a final round, you're practicing for the next race coming up. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So say to yourself, yeah, this is fun. This is practice, and this is easy. Because you know, kind of doing the opposite of this, saying to himself, this is going to be hard to beat these guys, which is what he's currently saying. So trying to change those around. That's great. Also, what I did with him is help him identify his strengths, and I ask him, Austin, tell me about, you know, what makes you a really great athlete, so you can remind yourself of that, you know, going into that final round. And he said, I'm one of the strongest guys in my age group, first in the turns. I have a best power to weight ratio in my class. I said, I can jump well, I'm smooth when I ride, I'm confident, I'm the most confident of anyone in my age group. And then I asked him, what's your specialty, what do you do best? And he said, I'm being fast, I'm first out of the gate. I asked him about competitive instinct. He said, yeah, I have a really killer instinct. And his vision, you know, he has a really strong vision for his Olympics. He's 16 years old, and he talks about BMX racing as my career. I mean, which is fantastic. You know, how many athletes, 16 years old, say it's my career? You know, he has that. He's that into it. So that's a really good sign to be able, of maturity and somebody who really knows where they're going. So to use that as his advantage, take this seriously. But yet still, you know, you got to have that balance between taking it seriously as a career but having fun. Because if you're able to loosen up and have fun, then you're going to be able to be relaxed and do your best at the competition there. And so he says another advantage is, he says, I know what to eat, I know what to drink, and when to eat. I know how to feel my body and what I need. So that's really important, because a lot of athletes, you know, when they're younger, they don't know how to know about nutrition or how to replenish their body, all those little things. Their parents have to, or coaches have to kind of remind them of that. But he's very into that aspect. And he says, I'm prepared going into each lap or each run. And then I reminded him, with these MP3s we're making, the visualizations would be even more prepared on a deeper level. And then another strength that he has is loving the sport, you know, being a real dedication, calling it a career, and being really passionate. So so those are things that I made him a MP3, a custom MP3, just with those. So you can do a whole session just on that, on asking an athlete about their strengths, do a strengths assessment. And, you know, in the chapter on confidence in your Performing Edge book that you all have, there's, an assessment there, a strengths assessment, where you go through and ask them, what you're strongest in, what you feel good about yourself, what are your best assets, what are your best achievements, and ask them all those things. And it's really a great confidence builder, I think, to write all those down, ask them what makes you, the best, good in your sport, what attracted you to your sport, why do you like what you're doing, all those kind of questions, and just to get them to talk about it, what they're good at, and then just make one separate MP3 visualization just with that, and turn it into power words. So you just turn their statements into power words. I can jump well, and put it, just use I words instead of you, saying, I can jump well, I'm smooth when I ride, I'm one of the strongest guys in my age group. So that when they're listening to it, they're, personalizing it for themselves. And I would say each statement twice if you can. I jump well, I'm smooth when I ride. I can jump well, I'm smooth when I ride. Use that, do each statement twice, and that way it helps the athlete to really internalize those statements. And that's a really good MP3 that he could play right before his your athletes can play right before their final competition. And that's something that is general, so they can, it's specific to that person, it's only for them, but it is something they could play before any practice or training. It applies to everything they do. And then you could make another, what I did was for Austin, is make another MP3, a visualization. The first session I had him go through his, a one peak experience where he felt really good in the past, and talked about the one of his peak performances. He said it was at, or you can say, if someone doesn't remember a peak performance, you could say a peak experience, something that you remember where you were performing really well. He said at the Olympic Training Center, when he was invited there for a week back in October last year, he was doing some of the biggest jumps in the world and training with the best top riders in the world. And Chula Vista was on a one-week program there. And he said his goal is to next time go there and establish residency. That's a good term to know. Some athletes are just on a trial program, which he was. And then after you prove yourself, you can do what's called establishing residency at the Olympic Training Center, so you can go more often, or you could stay there for a whole summer kind of thing, and they actually provide everything for you. So that's a real great thing to be able to have your athletes do, that they can go there to, there's one, you know, Olympic Training Center in Chula Vista, which is near San Diego, and then there's one in you know, Colorado Springs, Colorado too, for all the different sports. So yeah, we did a visualization about one of his peak experiences when he was there, and went through that same process of doing a pre-visualization assessment with him, and so I had him. And what you'll find with a lot of athletes is when they're doing their peak or reporting their peak performance, you know, they don't have a lot of expectations going into it, and that's one of the key things for. I think for Austin and for these athletes, for their races, is to not have, you know, put a lot of expectations on themselves going into it. That's when usually when athletes do their best performances. And the Olympic Training Center has, he said it has different tracks. The tracks are different. It's 10 times bigger, faster than the regular track, so you need a lot more skills. He said he was excited and nervous. He said, I'm just going to go there and be there for the experience. And he said, once I started riding, the attention I was receiving, you know, you have to be at the top of your game. And he said, I'm just going to go there and say, if I do well, just do my best I can, and whatever happens, happens. And what a great mindset that is. So that's the kind of mindset, like John, you were saying, you know, have that same mentality for that you can apply from the preliminaries into the final round, just to say, I'm here for the experience, and I'm, you know, no expectations, I'm just going for it, be in the present, and, just focus on the task, and then just say, whatever happens, happens, and not to be able to say, you know, my goal is to win this race. I think, of course, that is the goal, but if you can have them, your athletes, put that in the background and not be that, have that be in the foreground, then they can, you know, the results will take care of themselves. So so I did a visualization about that, his peak experience. And then, you know, for instance, you know, the kind of thing I did was said, you know, it's, you want to be really specific when you're talking with them about using their words. And so, for instance, I said, you know, okay, you get in the gate, you're thinking you're doing your best, you're having fun doing it, not thinking too much about it. You snap the gate, which means, you know, they get out of the gate. I'm going out fast, I'm calm, I'm relaxed over the gate, I'm having fun, and not thinking about anything but just riding. I have a natural body movement. My body knows just what to do. And then you just get in. And then I got into the specifics of the run. You know, it's a four-story hill. You're steep. You're going down the jump, over the first jump side by side. And it's smooth. And keep it smooth and low. And carrying the momentum down the backside of the jump. And he's ahead of me. And there's another guy that he's racing against. First straightaway, the turn's good, and second straightaway, smooth and low. And I'm just out here doing this mentally. At the end, I feel really good, and I feel confident. It's so a surprise that I'm doing so well. So that kind of thing, you know, just doing a, you know, being in the moment and using their words. And you might not know, you know, specifically all the technical terms that they are using, but just write them down as they give them to you. You know, at first I didn't know what snap the gate meant, and that just means getting out of the gate. But use the words that they use, those phrases, so that they're familiar with them, and it becomes their, you're using their language. We did that visualization, and then I checked in with him the next week, and he said that his training was going a lot better. He's feeling more confident than the other riders, and beating this one guy, his competition, by a lot more than the past week, and he was thinking about then he was leaving for the final, the nationals coming up in Louisville, Kentucky this weekend. So we did another visualization. I had him describe the track to me there, and I asked him to send me a video. You can do that if an athlete is going to a specific event, ask them to send you the link of the race or game event where they're going to be, and then you can watch. Often there's a video there of the course, or you can watch other athletes doing that course there, and then you get familiar with it. So I was able to watch the course that, on video that he was going to be doing this coming weekend in Louisville, Kentucky. And then as I'm watching the course, then I'm, you know, kind of taking him through the visualization with his, the way he described it. So that, you know, I'm not only, so that way you can, as a performing edge coach, you can, you know, get two, you're sort of having two inputs. You're having the visual of the video of the course itself and seeing what's happening there, so you can add your own interpretation of what's, how it feels, what's going on, and then you've also got the athlete's interpretation of what they've told you. In this case, that this athlete had been to that course the previous year, so he knew it well, and so he can describe it well and describe the turns and the jumps and how he wants to stay smooth and quick and stay low and smooth. And so I put all those words in the visualization, and then I emailed it to him this last night. Now he's on his way to the semi, to the race. And what you want to do during the competition then is ask, make yourself available. And I think, you know, you can charge just by, I wouldn't say, in terms of charging people, don't say, you know, this certain amount of money per month and you get unlimited phone calls and unlimited emails. I think some athletic coaches do that, I think, but it's really, you know, some, you end up just working way too hard, say, for one athlete that could take up all of your time. I mean, you might want to do that for a top athlete, an Olympic athlete, if you're at the Olympics or a professional race, you know, as a special task, so that you can have the experience of working with a top athlete and getting a great testimonial and getting that association. But in general, in your practice, I think it's better to say, you know, here's my hourly fee, and get a monthly fee. You know, in my case, you know, like I charge $995 for a month for four sessions, and then I... and then I say, you know, each session is one of those sessions, you know, say is the $250. And then if I work with them at the event, if they call me again, then we do another session, and that counts as one of those sessions. It's not just it's not that way. You're not you're being paid, you know, well for your time, and you're not making yourself available 24 hours a day. Because I think your time is really, I think each one of you has tremendous skills, and you want to value your time and value your skills. So it's better to do it on an hourly rate like that, and make it clear to the parents or the athlete that that's how you're charging. It's basically like attorneys do that; they get a retainer, you know, a certain amount of money up front, and then they work off that retainer with their hourly fee, if you can think of it that way. Then, you know, you feel like you're really being compensated properly for the time that you're putting in, because you all are experts at this, and I want you to be charged what you're worth, kind of thing. You may start out at a lower fee, you know, like I did. I started out at $75 an hour when I was first starting, and then $95, and then I went up to $150 an hour, and then $195, and then $250, and as you know, just go up gradually. If you find if there's no resistance, then you know you're at the right amount, kind of thing. So that's just a little bit about you know, charging for your time. So yeah, so that's the case study I wanted to share. Any other comments about that, or do you, any of you have any cases that you want to share? Okay. Alex and Greg, are you there too? And John?
Yeah.
Okay, good. You guys are mesmerized. Or do you have any questions or thoughts about what to do with athletes or tough you know, cases you're dealing with? One of the things I wanted to mention was that's important to work with athletes is to be able to anticipate and plan for distractions, you know, at a top competition. Anticipating the problems that might come up and difficulties to performance. And so I think if you can anticipate these things that might happen, then you've already identified those, and the energy and the impact of one particular element is lessened, and so you have that awareness of how they can respond, how they can have different responses to that situation. So you want to kind of establish that ahead of time. Ask them, plan a time ahead of time. You don't want to do it maybe right before the competition, because that's when an athlete's just trying to focus on, you know, doing their best. But maybe a week before or a couple weeks before, ask them, you know, okay, so what kinds of things could come up so we can come up with a plan for the possible distractions that might happen or the different scenarios. Let's practice the different scenarios that could come up. In this case, with this BMX rider, it was like, could come unclipped or, you know, overthink the turn. He sort of goes into more of a left brain thinking, overthinking a certain jump or a run, instead of just staying in that right brain, which is more just kind of being open. And I like to use the term soft eyes, you know, which is kind of, if you're really anxious, you tend to be thinking of, you know, your vision gets kind of narrowed down, and kind of like, let's say you're driving and you're late for an appointment, and you're looking at your trying to find the Starbucks you're going to meet somebody at, and you're thinking, where is that place? Where is that? And you can't find it because you're just so nervous, and your vision gets narrowed down. But if you have what I call soft eyes, which is just kind of, you know, more relaxed eyes, your whole body is relaxed, then your vision opens up, and all of a sudden, I've had that happen to me before, where I was going to meet somebody and I was a little bit late, and then all of a sudden I said, okay, take a couple deep breaths, and just I know it's supposed to be right here, around here, and then all of a sudden I open up, oh my God, there it is, there's the Starbucks. Just kind of an example of having those soft eyes where you can, when you're more relaxed, your eyes are just able to see everything around you. Your peripheral vision gets bigger, and you can see things more in terms of your right brain. And so I think athletes can use that too. And, you know, like this BMX rider could see the jump more clearly, and, you know, with those soft eyes, eyes that can just see the big picture and have a feeling for what they need to do, rather than at that time in the race, you don't want to be analyzing the technical stuff. You want to just be able to put it all together. And soft eyes can help you kind of see, judge your distance between other people, judge what you need to do. So that's one kind of tool, I think, that you could use for your athlete toolbox, is those soft eyes. And in terms of getting back to preparing for distractions, you might want to kind of develop a little chart to analyze and prepare for difficult conditions. So, you know, with the athlete, you can brainstorm a list of, the different competitive or event-related conditions, and then, what you're going to do with each condition. So, for instance, here's three conditions that you could help them identify. One is the most challenging possibility. What's the worst thing that could happen in your race, or what's the most difficult situation you might be up against? So, maybe athletes that are in a group sport, like soccer, volleyball, something, it might be challenging, might be not being able to play play as much as they want. They're sitting on the bench more. And then, your family and friends having unrealistic expectations of your performance. In this case, with the BMX rider, it might be challenging possibility might be having difficulty, having your biggest competition right next to you. This guy coming out of the gate and watching him go ahead of you, and then you want to be able to figure out create a list of those most challenging possibilities, and then the next thing is the best way to prepare for those. So what are you going to do in that situation? In the case of with the BMX rider, the top rider going out in front, use the magnet technique would be one way of preparing for it and dealing with it. Imagine that putting a magnet on that guy's back in front of you, and rather than working so hard to catch up, imagine that magnet is drawing you toward that person effortlessly, so you feel their energy pulling you along. They're doing the work rather than you. So that's one example. You could outline different goals that you have, and be able to prepare for all the different scenarios that might come up. Let's say if it's raining, some people just have a bad attitude about the weather. And thank God I never run well in the rain, or I never play tennis well, or of course the game might be canceled in that case, but it's I never ride well in the rain. And if you can think of, change your attitude about it and say that everybody has to deal with these same conditions, and that maybe prepare for the, if you know that it's going to be raining that day, of a race ride in the rain ahead of time, so you're better prepared for it and better skilled at it. Visualize that rather than shying away from it and saying, God, I hate the rain, help them to embrace it and visualize the rain and realize that everybody's got to deal with this. And if you can be the best out there, best rain rider, then you're going to come out ahead. So having a list of challenging possibilities, number one, and then for each challenging possibility, think of the best way of preparing for it. Have a list of things that you can do to handle that situation. So that you can have a way to deal with each situation successfully. And then the third thing is ask yourself, how might this condition serve as an advantage? Let's say somebody, an example of the soccer player who has to sit on the bench, it could be an advantage because it's a chance to watch the other team's weaknesses. It's an opportunity to communicate with your coach and, say, your family and friends if you're sitting there. Thinking about things that, okay, how can I, even if I can't do anything about this situation, how could it be an advantage to me? How can I use this as an advantage? So those are three things that you can have athletes write down to be able to anticipate and plan for distractions. Number one, again, to the most challenging possibility, and number two, the best way of preparing for it, and then number three, how the condition might serve as an advantage. So, and then I wanted to emphasize some other things, like just that concept of less is more. I think at a time before the competition, athletes always want to get into that final workout or that final training. Tendency is to want to over-prepare for an event, squeezing in, more competitions and more practices as the event approaches. And oftentimes, that concept of leaving your race on the track is so true, where athletes don't, they don't, they're not well rested because they've been training, overtraining. So what you want your athletes to do is you know, each sport is very individual, of course, in terms of how you taper, but you know, you want to be well rested before the event physically. But what you can do to overcome the nervousness is to prepare more mentally. So you can think of it like in a grid, the two lines are crossing. Your physical training is coming down, and your mental training, the time you spend mental training, is going up right before a competition. And so they can. So you want to have, if possible, before major competition, if you can have worked with an athlete for a month or two, and each session you do another visualization with them on a specific aspect, maybe their confidence on one, and maybe handling pressures and another, maybe another MP3 on how to get rid of the negative thoughts, another one on the specific race or game that's coming up, and another visualization on their strengths, using power words, all those things, so that they have a whole list of these, a whole library of your visualizations. Then they can use those as the race or the event is getting closer, and they can be playing more, doing less physical training and more mental training, and that way they've got a double advantage of really resting the body while really strengthening the mind, because those visualizations are not tiring the person out. Unless, you know, oftentimes people are tiring themselves out mentally because they're just worrying too much about what might happen. But if you can have them do these structured visualizations, then it's really helping them to put their mind at ease, that I'm preparing, I'm not just spending time worrying and ruminating about what's going to happen, but I'm actually just visualizing and preparing for all the different possible scenarios, and just going over, seeing yourself going through each one successfully. And then, you know, in terms of, we're so lucky now that we're in the era of the iPod and iPhone or smartphones, that people know the term playlist, and athletes are used to creating a playlist of, you know, say on their iTunes, a playlist of songs that they play on their, say, their iPod. They know how to do that. Any athlete under, you know, 25 years old knows how to do all this stuff themselves. So they just, you don't have to train them. They just figure it out. And it's great. And so they instruct them to create a playlist of your visualizations. You know, if it's Dr. John Cannon, ask them to create a file called Dr. John Cannon, or Dr. Alex, or Greg, Dr. Greg, any of us, you know, just to create a file of that, of their, of the visualizations you've created. That way they're all in one place, and it's just like a menu where they can select the visualization that applies to that situation, and they can, you know, have a variety of things to listen to there. And then you'll be essentially coaching them in their ear the whole time. And it can really create a sense of calm and peacefulness, and a sense that they've got a real strategy here. It's not just a hit or miss kind of thing, but it's a real program that you've put them through. So that's some tips for for handling distractions and handling the anxiety that goes along with it, with races. And I think, you know, pressure is something that that athletes have difficulty handling, and that's one of the best areas that we can, I think, really help athletes with, is in that top competitions. And I think if you can tell athletes that pressure is something that you put on yourself when you're not prepared, when you don't have faith in what you're doing, or if you fear the unexpected. And with our type of training that we're doing here, the mental training, you can tell your athletes that now you have a choice. you can look forward to the challenge of your event and test your limits, or you can cringe in front of it. That's your choice. And so when I talk to athletes coming up on an important event, my advice is always to them to welcome the pressure. Look at it as an opportunity to shine and to celebrate your fitness and your sport. And if you embrace the competition and thrive on it, you'll be amazed at how successful you'll be. And I think, you know, so tell your athletes, you know, when the situation gets tight, you know, you'll have the edge. Remind them that you're giving them that edge, the mental edge, you know, with this type of training. And that athletes will know there's just that much pressure, just as much pressure on everyone else. And so you'll know exactly how to handle it. So what you're doing with these sessions, mental training, is teaching your athletes how to handle that pressure. And so, you'll get concerns about performance anxiety and self-doubt and difficulty relaxing as the event draws near. And I think athletes are so focused on the physical elements of the race and all the details. Their coaches are telling them all the different things they have to do. I think often athletes forget to prepare emotionally for the real race inside the mind, or the real event there. And so I'm referring to it as race, but it could be a game or a race. When your event day finally arrives, or game day, often something comes up that they weren't mentally prepared for, and it can throw their whole plan off. And so if you want to have, a plan set up for them. And so here's a sequence of mental preparation that I wanted to give you that athletes can do, like 2 weeks before. Things they can do 2 weeks before an event, and then 2 days before, and then the night before. So 2 weeks before the event, athletes will often ask you, well, how early should you prepare for a race or a game? And I think each person is different, and there's no thing of starting too early. Actually, you should start more like 2 to 3 months in advance. But usually you'll get calls from athletes that they, have something coming up in a week or two. And so I always tell athletes you need to be practicing your mental training techniques as an ongoing part of your training. Hopefully what the goal is, once you get an athlete as a client, maybe they have a competition coming up, but then you help them to create the results they want, and then they'll want to continue to work with you, so that it's your mental training is an ongoing part of their physical training. And then when competition time arrives, you're just putting the finishing touches on. And so I think generally a good time to begin specific mental preparation is, the specific part is 2 to 3 weeks prior to the event. And the main objective in this phase is you want to build confidence by mentally rehearsing the event in its entirety. So you see the whole event, and you use the tools of visualization and concentration described in, that we've been talking about in these earlier calls and in the modules in your training there. And we'll go into more specifics. We'll do it part two of this next time too, but more tools of visualization. I think Dave, one of our coaches, Dave Mahoney, emailed earlier. He's working specifically in the area of golf, and he was saying that he was visualizing how he could use these kinds of things. He said he was imagining himself as a student or a student of his this Monday qualifying for the PGA golf tour event. And he said PGA events start on Thursdays, so he wants to have a game plan in place. And he said it's almost like calling a timeout in a field goal kicker to give him more time to think and get him to freeze. And so he said that power words and visualization, modeling all seem to be great tools. And he wanted to hear more about that. So that was one of, thank you, Dave Mahoney, for his question on that. And so, yeah, I'm sort of addressing that here, that I think if you can have your athletes spend each night 10 minutes before they go to bed doing visualization and mental imagery of their upcoming event, and if you can make them a series of these MP3s for that, and there may be a series of upcoming events, so you could make an MP3 for each one, or you could make an MP3, an audio for each aspect of their event, you know, as I mentioned, one on confidence, and one on speed, one on handling the pressure, anything that comes up. Sometimes athletes have a specific thing that is going on in their life that they can use as motivation. Like I had, one athlete who her grandmother just had passed away, and so she was really grieving about that. But yet she was going for the Olympics, so she was using the death of her grandmother as an inspiration to be able to do the race for her. And so we did some visualizations around that and grieving of a family member and using that as, a strength to, have a purpose for competing. With this, 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks before your event, you want to build on your past successes in training by capturing those feelings of fluidity and power and effortlessness. And so you want to, have your athlete experience themselves as composed and focused and confident. And then and you want to include, if you can, have them visualize all the different possibilities that might occur during the event. Kind of create your own top 10 list of the different things that might happen so that you see yourself responding to anything unexpected really well and being able to handle any circumstance. So people don't shy away from those things, but, it might be their top competition shows up, somebody they hadn't expected. You don't want them to be thrown off by that. Visualize coming from behind, visualize being in front and someone coming up on you, all those different things. So that you, if you can see all those in your mind, then you're so much more well prepared. So that's what you do 2 to 3 weeks before the event. And then 2 to 3 days before the event, now the majority of the preparation is done. And for most athletes, there's little they can do physically at that point to improve performance. But, sometimes athletes find it difficult to switch gears and allow your body to rest. And the best use of, if you can spend more, you can spend more time with them. Maybe do, sometimes I'll do not just one session a week, but at two or three sessions a week, and be able to, so they're really prepared, and because they might be getting really nervous at that time, and so you can tell the athletes that the best use of their time during this period is to train mentally, and that can make a huge difference in the outcome. And, there's really important things that they need to be addressing in order to do their best. You can tell them as they're reducing their physical training by tapering, they want to increase their time doing mental rehearsal and to not wait, just like cramming for a test. People want to do that, you want to tell them to not wait to do all their mental imagery till the night before their event. That you want to help them, if you can have a session with them the night before their event, that's ideal, by phone or by Skype. Or if you can't talk to them, then you could do a chat, by Skype. You could do typing, do a chat online, or you could do it by email. However you can communicate with them, help them to gain greater control over their surrounding environment to, reduce their workload, and so that you can ask them, you want them to allow their internal self to focus on the job ahead, because you want to have this develop this sense of, I mean, it's only 2 or 3 days before the event, so you want them to develop this sense of contained excitement, where they're eager and yet under control, and they feel like they're storing energy, so when the right time comes, and you give and it's the right time to perform, then you can let your body explode into action and do exactly what they need to do. So that's what to do 2 to 3 weeks before, and then 2 to 3 days before. And then the night before the event, what you want to do is, that's when the real focusing begins, and oftentimes athletes have trouble sleeping the night before the event, so you want to encourage them to get extra sleep 2 to 3 nights before. If they can sleep like 9 hours, that can help to put extra sleep into the bank, and in case they don't sleep the night before, and help them to take, you know, if they're in a different place, traveling somewhere, often if you can have them take a special pillow that they're used to sleeping with, and take earplugs in case the hotel is noisy, bring an eye patch, you know, over their eyes to in case, you know, so they can sleep in the morning, if they can, so they get extra sleep. All those things can really help. Anything that can help, and of course, bring that iPod or iPhone to with your visualizations on them, and earphones, so they can be listening to you. So all those are important. If they have any special foods they want to bring, special sports bars, you know, have them remember to bring the nutrition that they need. And so then you want to just have them develop a pre-event ritual or pattern they can carry out. The more they can develop this ahead of time and carry it out the same way before each event, then the more relaxed they'll be. And so, because that familiar routine, I think, really reduces anxiety and helps you feel better prepared. So, and it minimizes the fear of forgetting something at the last minute. So, some important things to do are, you have that quiet time, as I mentioned. Take 10 minutes deep abdominal breathing, mentally rehearse your event. And if there's any way they can watch, use visual models to watch a video of themselves performing or of one athlete that they admire. They can always go to YouTube, and you can watch any sport on YouTube. So, you know, expose your mind to athletes with good form, you know, 10 minutes before bedtime. You can do it while you're brushing your teeth. I do that all the time in the evenings. And then incorporate this into your mental imagery exercises. So the last thing you're thinking about before you go to sleep tends to be what you'll dream about. So if you're watching something like that, then chances are you're going to be dreaming about it. Your subconscious mind will be working on it for the next several hours. Instead of having that worry or anxiety, which most athletes tend to have right before they go to sleep, and then they carry that with them into their dreams, you want them to be, you know, more relaxed or playing your MP3. So have them put it right by your bed, by their bed, so that they can be, or a piece of paper to remind them, so that they can do that right before they go to sleep. So I have a whole list of things to do the night before the event, and other examples for you, other case studies, and also what to do the morning of the event, as well as during the start. I want to do cover that in part two on our next call, which would be it's always the second and fourth Thursday of the month, so that'll be September the 11th is our next call. And so this time, yeah, I hope that case study was helpful for you. And this time we covered, you know, how to handle distractions and what to do 2 to 3 weeks before, 2 to 3 days before the event, and some of what to do the night before. And, I'd encourage you to give me any feedback you have, any questions you have. Do any of you guys... I just wanted to thank everyone for being on the call, and maybe we can just go around, those of you who are left, and just tell me what was most helpful for you, or if there was one nugget that was helpful that you gained from this call that we could summarize for those that might be listening to the replay?
Sure, this is John. Yeah, I really enjoy that immensely. The difference in 2 weeks out and a couple of three nights out and then the day of, I really appreciated that. That's going to be very helpful.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, great. And you'll find that East Southeast is a little bit different, I think, in how they do this. But I think it's great to have a plan like that of the overall getting ready for the race. As you get more closer to the event, then you get more specific about what you need to do, and often more problems will come up, or they're anticipating problems that might come up. So you get, it's kind of like a laser, you know, at first 3 weeks before you're looking at the kind of the overall picture, and 3 days before you're zooming in, and then think of it as the night before you're just really honing in on what's exactly what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so good. Oh, thanks, John. I'm glad that was helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Alex or Greg, are you still there too?
Yeah, I kind of like the idea of putting more emphasis on simulating during practice what will eventually happen during competition.
Simulating practice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, the great thing about the imagery is that you can, there's no limit to what you can imagine. There is a limit to how much you can practice, how many situations you can come up with. But, you know, you can come up with so many more in your mind.
But I think oftentimes athletes, including myself, I think we practice under ideal situations, but we don't prepare ourselves with the mindset of under not ideal situations, like having competition or having somebody next to me making noises or having lousy weather. So all those things have become very distracting while competing, unless they are mentally prepared beforehand, then it can become a very easy distraction while competing.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's perfect, Alex, yeah. Yeah, practice those non... And a lot of athletes are afraid to think about those, the non-ideal conditions,
mm-hmm.
but that's exactly what can trip them up.
Yep.
And if they can think about bouncing back, you know, it's those athletes that prepare for the non-ideal conditions and have not only, most athletes only have a plan A, the hope and pray plan, but hope I get to the finish line or hope I get to finish the game. But if you can have that plan B and plan C, plan D, then you're going to be able to bounce back from any situation. So, yeah, thanks, Alex. That's great. Yeah, Greg, are you still there? I think I heard a beep. He might have gone off or gotten put on mute sometimes if you're driving. So, so great. Well, thank you so much, everyone. And yeah, John and Alex, Greg, it's great to have all of you here. And so we'll put on September the 11th, 9:00 Pacific for our next call, and we can go into this in more depth. You know, what to do on the night before the event and the morning of and then during the event and also after the event. I have a, you know, athlete critique and how to critique your event afterwards so you make it into a learning experience for the next competition. So, yeah, fantastic. If you have any questions or any ideas for other topics you'd like us to discuss on these calls, you know, feel free to email me, and I love getting feedback from you and including your ideas, because I want to make this really relevant to you.
All
so,
right.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. Okay, have a good Labor Day weekend, and all. Have fun with those barbecues.
You do the same.
Thanks.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Take Hot
care.
All right.
Thanks.
All right. Sounds good. Okay, have fun, and we'll talk to you soon then.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye now.